A Contra Podcast Conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a subject that maybe wasn't everyone's favorite in school. Statistics.
Yeah, definitely has that reputation. But honestly, it's become so critical for just understanding the world around us now. We're diving into the work of David J. Hand.
Exactly. And this isn't about doing math problems.
Yeah.
Hand really gets to the core of its statistics as this fundamental way to handle uncertainty.
Mm. So our mission today is to pull out those key ideas that let you, our listener, kind of see through the noise. You know, challenge the numbers you hear from, well, everywhere. Media authorities.
Yeah, it's about critical thinking, really.
Okay.
So let's start with the guide himself. Why is David J. Hand the right person to lead us through this?
Okay, so Hand isn't just any statistician. We're talking top-tier credentials here.
Yeah.
Emeritus professor at Imperial College London, former president of the Royal Statistical Society. Got the Guy Medal in Gold, which is a huge deal in the stats world.
Wow. Okay. So serious academic chops.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes him good for, you know, the rest of us, not just academics?
Well, that's the thing. He operates at this really high level of theory. He's even involved in the foundations of AI and machine learning.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also a gifted communicator. He wrote The Improbability Principle, which did a great job making complex ideas accessible.
Ah, I think I've heard of that one.
Yeah, it's that blend of deep expertise and clarity that's pretty rare. Plus, he's seen it all in practice medicine, finance, government. He knows where statistics works wonders.
And where it goes wrong.
Exactly. And the consequences when it does go wrong can be, well, pretty disastrous. So he brings that real-world perspective.
Okay, so let's get into the overview of his thinking. What's the big idea here?
Fundamentally, it's that statistics is the science of dealing with uncertainty, with variation. It's how we learn from incomplete information, which is basically all information, right?
Huh? Pretty much. It's the toolkit for learning from experience in a world that's, let's face it, messy.
Right. And his approach, particularly in something like statistics, a very short introduction, it's conceptual. It's about the why and the what, not the how-to.
No equations needed then.
Phew. No, he deliberately avoids making it a textbook. The goal is to equip you, the listener, whether you're a student, a professional, just a curious citizen, to actually evaluate the statistical claims you encounter every day.
I like that. So it builds up logically. From the basics.
Yeah. Starts with data itself. What is it? How do we get it? Then moves to describing that data, summaries, averages, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And then the really powerful part, inference. How do we take a small sample, something manageable, and learn something meaningful about the much bigger picture, the whole population?
That's the magic trick, isn't it? Going from the specific to the general.
It is. And Hand wants us to understand how that trick works, its strengths, but also its limitations. So we're not just passively accepting headlines.
Okay, let's dig into those concepts. Where does he start?
Right at the foundation. Statistics exists because of variability and uncertainty. If everything was perfectly predictable, we wouldn't need it.
Makes sense. Like clinical trials for a new drug or weather forecasting or even, I don't know, sports results. There's always that element of chance, of randomness.
Exactly. Statistics gives us the tools to find the signal within all that noise. But, and this is a huge but.
Let me guess. The data itself has to be good.
Bingo. The quality of your conclusion hinges entirely on the quality and the context of the data. Garbage in, garbage out. It's rule number one.
So how do we get good data? What's the gold standard?
That's where the randomized controlled trial, RCT, comes in.
Yeah.
You randomly assign people to either get the treatment or a placebo, the control.
And that randomness is the key.
It's crucial because it means, ideally, the only significant difference between the groups is the treatment itself. So if you see an effect, you have much stronger grounds to say the treatment caused it.
Okay, so that avoids hidden biases mostly. What's the opposite of that? What makes data bad?
Well, biased data is the big danger. Think about self-selection bias. You run a survey on, say, the joys of vegetarianism, but you only advertise it in vegan forums.
Right. Your results are going to be skewed from the start, regardless of the actual merits, because only certain people chose to even participate.
Precisely. So, okay, assume we have decent data. Now we need to summarize it. Descriptive stats. We all know the average, the mean.
Yeah. Add everything up, divide by the number of things.
But Hand pushes us to also consider the median, the actual middle value if you line everything up.
Okay, why the distinction? Let's take income, like the outline mentioned. If you have a few billionaires, the mean income might look really high.
Right. It gets dragged way up by those extreme outliers. But the median, the income of the person smack in the middle, that might give you a much better sense of what the typical person actually earns. It's more robust to those extremes.
So it depends on what question you're asking. You're asking about the total pie or the typical slice.
Exactly. The purpose matters. And Hens emphasizes an average alone is almost meaningless. You need measures of spread, too. Variance, standard deviation. Basically, how spread out is the data?
Ah, right. Like the restaurant example. Same average price, but one has everything at $30, the other has $5 appetizers and $550 main courses.
Yep. Same meat, totally different story told by the spread, the standard deviation. One is predictable, the other. Well, it's got huge variability. Understanding that spread is vital.
And that idea of variability leads us into probability, doesn't it? The actual language we use to talk about uncertainty.
It does. And Han points out, even probability isn't monolithic. There are different philosophical takes. The main two are frequentist and Bayesian.
Okay, break those down simply. Frequentist.
Think long-run frequency. If you flip a coin a million times, the probability of heads is the proportion of times it actually lands heads. It's about repeatable events.
Got it. And Bayesian?
Bayesian is more about a degree of belief. You start with a prior belief about something, then as new evidence comes in, you update that belief systematically.
Hmm. Does that difference, like, actually matter in practice? Or is it just academic?
Oh, it matters. Think about predicting something unique, like, will this specific company merger succeed? A strict frequentist might say you can't assign a probability because it's not repeatable.
But a Bayesian can.
Yes, because they can start with a prior belief based on past mergers, market conditions, and update it with specific news about this deal. It changes how you approach certain problems.
Okay, interesting. So probability helps us quantify uncertainty. Now, how do we make that leap to inference, generalizing from the sample?
This is where tools like confidence intervals come in, but they're often misunderstood. People see a 95% confidence interval and think.
Okay, there's a 95% chance the true value is in this specific range we calculated.
Exactly. But that's wrong. It's subtle. The 95% refers to the process. If you repeated the sampling process many, many times, 95% of the confidence intervals you construct would contain the true population value.
So it's about the reliability of the method over the long run, not the certainty of this one result.
Precisely. Your particular interval might be one of the 5% that misses. You don't know. It requires a bit of humility about what one sample can tell you.
Why is that distinction so important, say, for a regulator looking at drug effectiveness data?
Because if they misinterpret that single interval as having a 95% chance of holding the truth, they might approve a drug based on a potentially misleading result. Understanding it's about the process helps manage that risk. Maybe they need more studies, a larger sample.
Right. Okay, then there's the other big one,
yeah.
The p-value. Probably the most controversial statistic out there.
Definitely gets a lot of debate. Conceptually, the p-value answers a specific question. If we assume our default idea, the null hypothesis, meaning nothing interesting is happening, no effect is true, how likely are we to see data as extreme as, or more extreme than, what we actually collected just by random chance?
So a tiny p-value means, wow, this data would be really surprising if the null hypothesis were true.
Exactly. It suggests maybe the null hypothesis isn't the best explanation. The common mistake, though.
It's flipping it around.
Yeah.
Thinking the p-value is the probability that the null hypothesis itself is true.
Correct. It's the probability of the data, or more extreme data, given the null, not the probability of the null given the data. Sounds similar, but it's a critical difference.
And that leads people to overstate their findings, claiming proof when they just have evidence that's inconsistent with the null.
Yep. Big problem in research reporting sometimes. Okay, moving on to prediction. Models and regression, using math to represent relationships and make forecasts.
But here lies the dragon. Correlation versus causation?
Always. We have to say it again. Just because two things move together, correlation, doesn't mean one causes the other.
The classic ice cream sales and crime rates example. Both go up in summer.
Right. The confounding variable is hot weather. Ice cream doesn't cause crime. To show causation, you need more than just observational data showing a correlation. You typically need careful experiments, like those RCTs we talked about.
So pulling back to the big picture, Han connects all this to modern tech, right? Big data, AI.
Oh, absolutely. He sees statistical science as the underpinning for so much of it. Machine learning algorithms. They're built on statistical principles, regression, classification, probability.
So understanding these fundamentals helps you understand the engines driving the modern world in a way.
Definitely. And he also stresses the ethical responsibilities, being transparent about your methods, communicating clearly, because statistical analysis influences policy, court verdicts, medical choices.
The stakes can be incredibly high.
Immense.
Okay, let's try to boil this down. If you had to pick the key themes, the core mindsets Han wants us to adopt, what would they be?
First big one. Statistics is the science of uncertainty, not certainty. Get comfortable with probabilities, with ranges, with maybe. Don't demand absolute answers where they don't exist.
That's a big mental shift for a lot of people, I think. Okay, what's next?
Second, the foundational importance of data quality. Always, always ask, where did this data come from? How is it collected? Could it be biased? Because fancy analysis can't fix bad data.
Makes sense. Garbage in, garbage out still applies. Okay. Number three.
Averages conceal more than they reveal. Don't stop at the mean. Ask about the median. Look at the distribution. Demand to know the spread, the standard deviation. That tells you about the variability, the risk.
Right. The full story isn't just the center point. And the last one.
It ties it all together. Statistical literacy as a pillar of modern citizenship. It's not just academic. It's a basic survival skill for critically evaluating claims from, well, everyone trying to persuade you with numbers.
Politicians, advertisers, media reports.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need it to be an informed citizen.
Totally.
Hand also has a knack for summing things up neatly. Any quotes or core ideas that really stand out?
Yeah, he frames statistics not just as math, but as something more fundamental. He calls it, statistics is the technology of learning from experience, which elevates it, right? It's the systematic way we gain knowledge.
I like that. Technology for learning. What else?
There's the classic line, often attributed to George Box, but embraced by Hand. All models are wrong, but some are useful.
Yes. Important humility there.
Crucial. Statistical models are simplifications. They don't capture reality perfectly. The goal is to create something useful for understanding or prediction, even if it's not perfectly right.
So utility over absolute truth in modeling and the correlation one.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. He says something like, correlation does not imply causation, but it does waggle its eyebrows suggestively and gesture furtively while mouthing, look over there.
Huh. That's brilliant. It acknowledges correlation as a clue, right? It points you in a direction, but you still need to do the detective work.
Exactly. It tells you where to investigate, but it's not the final answer on cause and effect.
Okay, let's make this super practical. How can someone listening apply these ideas like today?
All right, health news. You see a headline. New drug reduces risk by 30%. Sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Your first question should be, 30% of what? Ask about the absolute risk. If the original risk was tiny, say 1 in 10,000, then a 30% reduction is still pretty tiny in absolute terms. The relative number sounds bigger than the reality might be.
Good point. Context matters. What about money?
Finance, definitely. An investment boasts a high average return. Great. But what's its volatility? Its standard deviation. High returns often come with high risk, high spread. You need both numbers to judge if it fits your risk tolerance. Don't just chase the average.
Makes sense. And for civic stuff, like polls.
Opinion polls look straight past a headline number to the margin of error and then question the sampling method. Who did they ask? How? Was it online? Landlines only? Did they only poll likely voters? Asking those questions turns you from passive consumer to active critic.
Yeah, you start thinking like a statistician, almost. And the consequences of not thinking this way.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Challenger disaster.
Yeah, a tragic example. Engineers apparently had data showing a link between cold temperatures and O-ring failure risk, but they struggled to communicate the statistical risk clearly and effectively to the managers making the launch decision.
So the statistical uncertainty wasn't properly conveyed or understood?
And the result was catastrophic. It's a stark reminder that clear communication of statistical findings, especially risk, is vital.
Okay, final thoughts then. What's the biggest takeaway for you from diving into Han's perspective?
For me, it really is that statistics is fundamentally a way of thinking. It's a framework for reasoning under uncertainty. It encourages skepticism, not cynicism, but healthy skepticism and a certain intellectual humility. Knowing what you don't know is as important as knowing what you do.
Yeah, I agree. What surprised me, or maybe just reinforced something powerfully, was looking at the examples of misuse in the legal system. You mentioned the Sally Clark case in the outline.
Ah, yes. A truly devastating case. She was wrongly convicted of murdering her two infant sons.
And a key part of the prosecution involved a massive statistical error, right? Confusing the odds.
Exactly. they fell into the prosecutor's fallacy. An expert witness calculated the extremely low probability of two babies in a family like hers dying naturally from Izzside's sudden infant death syndrome.
Okay, so very unlikely.
Very unlikely if it was natural causes. But the prosecution, and tragically the jury, flipped that around. They interpreted that low probability as meaning it was extremely unlikely she was innocent.
They confused P evidence innocent with P innocent evidence.
Precisely. They inverted the conditional probability. The fact that multiple SID's deaths are rare doesn't automatically mean that murder is the only likely alternative, especially when you consider the rarity of double homicides by mothers as well. It was a terrible misunderstanding of probability that led to a profound miscarriage of justice. She was eventually exonerated, but after years in prison.
It's chilling. It really underscores that this isn't just about interpreting polls or financial reports. Statistical literacy has real, life-altering consequences.
Absolutely. So the lasting insight for you, the listener, is hopefully this. You're now better equipped. Equipped to move from seeking impossible certainty to navigating the world probabilistically. And you have more confidence to question any claim that tries to hide complexity behind one simple, often misleading number.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker. Another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Aikatra Foundation.